Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Celerity Report. This is a special Celerity Report because in the interest of networking lovers of civilization and freedom fighters globally, we want you to be able to pass this far and wide. It's my privilege to welcome from Kuwait City a member of the parliament there, head of human rights, MP Schwab. Welcome to the Celerity Report, and you are our first guest from Kuwait. I'm really honored. And so it's wonderful to meet, you know, so I've been watching your work. So it's wonderful to meet you, if only by, you know, online mechanisms. But if we could start with you first giving a little introduction of what triggered you to go into politics and become such a leader in the human rights movement.
It is a long story, but it needs a single effort. But it is a lucky thing that you present the people. When you present the people, it will be a heavy job because you should do for them what they should have. So the first thing is protecting their rights. In the meantime, you know, the world not like before. Women, men, even children have been changed because of the effect of the social media. We are not like before. You know, when you was the university, you see even a big change between the student in the past and the student now.
Yeah.
In the past, they do their efforts, they need time, they use power. Now, just with one click, with a soft mobile, or they can do all the things. Before, we should write, we should read, we should follow, not like before. So this improvement, unfortunately, in the meantime, it cost us. It cost us because of what is going on. If you would like, we start. First of all, would like to welcome you. And I would like to inform you that I have a lot of questions. I am presenting the people. Uh-huh. I have followed what you have done. You are a great woman. You are a great hero to do a lot of things. To protect the people's rights. Our target in the life, not just looking for ourselves. Ourselves is a part of the human, all around right. The world. So right. My children, your family, my family, we are responsible about informing them about the truth. I would like in the first ask you, because you know, in our region, for myself, you are well known to me. I would like to let our people in our region to have a brief introduction about your kind attention self. And before that, I will present myself. Okay. I have been elected in 2009 as a member of Kuwaiti Parliament. In 2012, I was the Minister of Housing and National Assembly. Then I resigned from the Kuwaiti government because I have seen a lot of things which it is not in my principle. 2016 also I have been elected, and 2020 I have been elected. Now I am the head of the Human Rights Committee in the Kuwaiti Parliament. I am a guy who is looking to do all my best, not just to protecting Kuwaitis. No. It is true that I am protecting Kuwaitis because they fought for me. But my aim and my main responsibility for every human in the world, not just in my country, in our region, in the Middle East, in United States, in China, in everywhere. Because of this, we are trying to do all our best to present the fact to them. Before half an hour, I have received one small news that the Secretary of United Nations, Antonio Guterres, have asked the international society to put all their efforts to finish this pandemic. And he asked all the people and all the countries to close this sad file from the history of the humanity for forever. So I hope this news will encourage us to follow what should be to protect the right of the people. Please.
So I don't know anything about this. This is new to me. What did he ask?
He asked the international society to try to put all the efforts to finish the COVID.
And he requests
the people, all the people and all the countries to close this file. And I hope this is what we are looking for.
Right. Although if you look at sort of what I call the control grid that they're trying to put in place, it looks to me like they're working rapidly across all the different countries to implement it. And of course, that's one of my great concerns. Now, I just have to ask you about your background, because as I've watched your and tried to study your the role you've played in Parliament and the role you've played globally in leadership, you look to me like the reluctant politician that, you know, it's like, I don't want to do this, but somebody's got to do this and I can't stand this anymore. So I'm going to jump in and do it. but there's a reluctancy about your career driven by your passion to accomplish something, which I find very intriguing.
In fact, it is not an easy job. We are in the Parliament. In the Parliament, you know, we have some opposition and we have some people whom they are trying to stop all our efforts because they are not believing in democracy or they are not believing that the others have their own rights.
Right.
We have a lot of fights in the Parliament between the fact and fake. You know, it is like a battle, but it is without weapon. Our weapon is our mouth and our law. And this thing is not disturbing me because each battle I am going into, it is for the human being. It is for my country. It is for all over the world. I will be sad, so sad if I feel that somebody injured in the United States or attacked in the United States or attacked in Kuwait or attacked in Afghanistan. All of us are human. The colors, difference of the colors, doesn't mean that you are better or I am better. No, The best is that we are together.
So I think the challenging thing about exploring real solutions and global networks to build real solutions is we're in a situation where no one can be free unless everyone's free. So this is an all or nothing kind of thing. And what it means is, you know, I feel the people who've been trying to centralize power have done a great job of networking globally, but the people who are interested in democratic process and decentralization have not done the same great work in networking globally. And that's part of what you're trying to do. You're trying to help us come together to find the kind of real solutions we need if we want to be free. So,
This is what we are looking for. The distance between in the past, it takes days or hours to reach you. Now we can reach each other in seconds. It is true that a lot of people whom related or involved with the other party, they are not happy that we are in touch together or we are trying to explain and defend the rights of the human rights. But we have enough strength, and we are trying to encourage them.
Right.
Sorry, we are trying to encourage them. You should defend your rights. We are with you. We are supporting
absolutely.
You. Because of this, I have selected from several people, some of them high educated, some of them in media, some of them normal people, citizen. I have selected from them several questions. Because of this, we will go to these questions.
Okay.
we need them. I will tell you something about our region. Our region, in fact, there is a shadow in the what is going on around. Yes, it is true that we can hear what is going on in around us, around the world. But somebody here in our region is controlled by the people whom are trying to control the human being and
right.
to trying to control the world. This is
right.
our main problem. So we should challenge these kind of people to protect
right.
the rights of the people. If
right.
you would like, we can start some questions, which
yeah.
I have received from.
So we share a common enemy. We both reject Mr. Global's plan. So just dive in. Why don't you start and you lead the way?
Yeah. Yes. We are together and we have one enemy. but this is the right. And we would like to open the window for our people in our region to know the truth. You know, when
right.
we are trying to show the truth, there is a lot of attack from others to protect themselves. Not to protect themselves by saying the truth. No, by hiding the truth, they're trying to protect themselves. They are doing the small wisdom, which they say the best thing to defend yourself, attacking the others. And this is what is our enemy and the human being enemy are doing.
Right.
So they are not explaining for you or the normal people the truth. They are trying to hide it and also to attack you and attack me and to attack any people whom are trying to discover the truth. And
right.
a lot of science, a lot of journalists, a lot of politics people have been affected by these enemies. You know how many countries collapse
right.
from this criminal pandemic.
Was the COVID-19 as harsh on small business and enterprise in Kuwait as it was in the United States?
Yes. It cost us. I am in the parliament. Last year, when the pandemic started, I don't want to say it is a pandemic, the created pandemic,
right.
The fake pandemic. It cost us, I am also a member of Kuwait budget mm-hmm. committee in the parliament. It cost us not less than 2 billion Kuwaiti dinar, around 6.5 billion dollar, just in the first 18 months.
Right. Very, very.
And
there are 500 new billionaires. I'm sure you're thrilled with that too.
I think this kind of money, which I have said to you, it goes to them or their partners.
Yep. So do you want me to dive through the questions or do you want to ask them?
Yeah, I will
okay.
ask you the question to let the people know what is the question. But because of before of this, I would like the more sad thing. Two things, which is the worst things, what happened because of these kind of people,
uh-huh.
the life of the people whom they death and the education. They destroy
right.
the education, especially for the children. And we don't know, but we hope God help both of us to say the truth. I will start the question if you...
Okay, yeah.
You know, we will start and we'll talk about Schwab and Bill Gates and the people should know who are they.
Right.
From my side, as I heard from the social media, newspaper and everything, we know that they are a part of the group. Bill Gates is warning that a new pandemic will happen. How does Bill Gates know about it?
So I used to work on Wall Street. We call it talking your book. So if you look at what Bill Gates is trying to accomplish in this world, I think people believing that there will be another pandemic, it helps him achieve what he wants to achieve. So Gates is talking his book. Now, the question is, does he believe for environmental reasons or does he believe for political reasons that there will be another pandemic? If you look at the treaty that the WHO is working on, they're trying to create an international treaty that will allow the WHO, very much influenced or controlled by Bill Gates, to just declare another global pandemic in a treaty where all the countries have to go along. So one of the reasons he may believe there's another pandemic is he's setting up the mechanism to declare pandemic after pandemic after pandemic. And I'm a great believer that he is part of a group of people who are absolutely committed to downloading an operating system in the human body. And they're going to achieve that with constant injections, you know, of mysterious ingredients of the kind we've just seen. And they can only do that. They can only justify this injection program globally if they have pandemic after pandemic in it. What we've seen is they've worked tremendously on the technology they need to be able to pretend that there is a pandemic.
Mm-hmm. But has Bill Gates spoken about a form of digital implementable tattoo and ATC, like Microchip? Is there such a thing? What Bill Gates' involvement in this?
So I don't know. Microsoft has created patents related to what I would describe as downloading an operating system into your body, whether through a chip or through ingredients and injection that aggregate, or the digital tattoo. So, you know, there's a form of different technologies that are potential interface for what's called brain machine technology. How far they are on this, I have no idea. What they can do now, I have no idea. But I do believe that the group that Gates fronts for is very committed to essentially putting humans on a control grid that includes integrating things into their body that will help them do very intimate surveillance and influence and mind control. So I think they're trying to figure out how to do this. And it wouldn't surprise me if one of the goals for the COVID-19 injections was to prototype various forms of this, because we know from legitimate researchers that there are secret ingredients that weren't disclosed. We know that there wasn't informed consent. So the question is, what are the secret ingredients and what are they expected to do? And I suspect it relates to prototyping some of these. So if that's the case, it's not the first time we see different countries and different companies working on microchipping people or the digital tattoo. So this technology and brain machine interfaces in development and being prototyped, and it's real and we should take it seriously, but there's no clear indication that they've figured out what they want to do and how to do it. I think they're trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Apple gets what's the involvement between or relation between Bill Gates and the World Health Organization?
So my recommendation is, if you haven't read Robert F. Kennedy's book on Fauci and Gates, I would strongly recommend it, because he does a very good job of documenting the history, including the financial history. The Gates Foundation and Gates have been very involved in basically financing and influencing the World Health Organization. I would describe the World Health Organization from my vantage point as an organization that's not only deeply compromised, but is in the business of compromising sovereign governments. It's part of, you create an international treaty and you use that treaty to override the sovereign government and their constitutions. And Gates' influence and funding of the World Health Organization has been exceptionally significant. I do want to say, if you look at how the finances work on the Gates Foundation or Gates' business interests, you know, I think of Gates as a front, not the leader of this operation. You're talking about a significant amount of money, and the investment and financial community doesn't operate. In other words, one person like Gates can't really do this, but they can front for a group of interests. So I see one of my colleagues calls Bill Gates a chew toy. Do you know what a chew toy is? Do you have chew toys in Kuwait? Chew toy is a toy you give the dog, you know, to chew on. It's a rubber bone you throw the dog. And one of my wonderful colleagues says that Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci are the chew toys of COVID-19, and they're going to be, they and Klaus Schwab are going to be thrown away to the crowd. So I think it's important when you look at what Gates is up to understand we're dealing with an investment syndicate, and I would say a central banking model, because I think the central bankers are at the heart of this. We're looking at a banking and investment community that want total central control, and Gates is part of what's fronting for them. So is Schwab.
No. Where is Fauci now? He disappeared.
That's what I'm told. So I haven't really followed Fauci. And it was interesting because I don't know if you've read Kennedy's book yet. It is fantastic. I mean, it's just unbelievable research. And if you look at the group of people globally that Kennedy has attracted over many years to help him produce something that is this extraordinary in terms of mastering the complexity, it's quite something. You know, I thought I knew how evil Fauci was before I read the book. I thought, you know, I know the 411 on Fauci. I don't need to read this book. I started the book. I couldn't put it down. And I realized, oh, this is much worse than even I ever dreamed. So if you look at what has been now documented and proved beyond a shadow of a doubt, you know, I'm amazed Fauci shows up anywhere. If I were Fauci, I would, you know, I'd go to the top of the Himalayas and never come back.
So, especially after they announced the documents.
Well, here's the thing. What astonishes me about the goodness of the human race is these people can still walk down the street safely. I mean, if I were them, I would be seriously concerned about my safety. And it's extraordinary that they've been left untouched. I mean, we're talking about people who've killed a lot of people. So, you know, at some point, you know, the Germans had a phrase called death killers. And, you know, we're talking about death killing on a huge scale. Mm-hmm. So if I were Anthony Fauci, I'd be hiding.
I think he's under the law of witness protection.
Could be.
As I have heard.
Yeah.
And this means he's a part of the crime which happening around the world.
So if you look at Fauci's, from the time that Fauci took over his agency, he has allocated almost $800 billion, $750 billion has been allocated into AIDS. And if you look at how he's engineered that, he's made a fortune for the pharmaceutical companies, you know, and numerous other private interests that he's handed out billions and billions of dollars to. So I'm assuming that for many, many years, Fauci just considered himself untouchable because he was, you know, he was such a moneymaker for so many people. But I think this time, you know, I'm assuming he's done a good job of following orders. But also there's a point at which, you know, your brand has been sufficiently damaged publicly that you have to go into witness protection or you get thrown into the chew toy basket.
As my information that this pandemic have been prepared very well. 2009, Bill Gates have talked about the same. Thereafter, if you read the management of such a concern department related to the license of any medicines, you will see that a part of these, like FDA or any other department, they have a good and good relation with the manufacturers, and they are somehow they were working with the manufacturers, and they moved to the license. Right. Departments or the related departments of licensing medicine. So if you watch or reread the what is going on, you will find a really strong relation between isolating the pandemic, creating the pandemic,
right.
and the crimes which are happening against the people around the world.
So here's the challenge. If you're Mr. Global and you want to centralize control, the question is, how do you overrun the laws and the constitution sufficient to give you what you need to get that central control? And I think about, in the mid-90s, or 2000, once he'd done his deal with the Department of Justice, Gates was part of a group of people who realized the power of healthcare, medicine, and sort of epidemics and pandemics to get control and to override the law and constitution. A lot of politics is about creating enemies, and some enemies are visible and some enemies are invisible. And the beauty of pandemics is you create an invisible enemy, including one that you can control. And then you've got a steamroll that you can use to frighten people and override the constitutional laws and sovereign laws. And if you go back to the history of them trying to engineer these pandemics, this has been going on for quite some time. And that's why understanding the history of Fauci and Gates is very helpful, because for many people, they can't fathom that a global pandemic could be sort of falsified and engineered in this way. And you have to go back and look at the history of how this machinery has been put in place for it to make sense. And it's one of the reasons I'm so concerned about what the WHO is doing with this new treaty they're working on, because they're, they've learned a lot from the last 2 years, and they're working up to doing, taking what they've learned and figuring out how to do it the next time, which may well be why Gates is saying there will be a next time, because they're working on creating the machinery to make this one much more powerful.
Last week, the European Council gave green light to start the negotiation on the International Pandemic Treaty. You know about this?
Right.
Last week?
Yes.
They have a strong influence. And if you watch their influence, it is in FDA, CDC, and WHO, World Health Organization, and the European Council. And now about a very big part of the European Parliament Union, they are fighting against what is going on.
Right. So what they're trying to do is create a control grid. So I'm going to grossly oversimplify just to make it simple. So if you look in the United States for the last 20 or 30 years, a great deal of money has been stolen. So they issued trillions of dollars of debt, and then trillions of dollars disappeared out of the back door. And that money represents the money they were going to use for retirement, for pension, for healthcare. Okay, so there's been a bank robbery. And rather than say to people, oh, we stole your money, that's not a very political thing to do. They're going to say, oh, we have a magic virus, and now we have to cut back, and we have to put in a control grid. And that control grid is going to give us the ability to dramatically reduce your economic footprint and your style of life. So it's a way of implementing austerity. So once you've stolen all the money and you want to keep the money, you need a way of controlling and managing the population. So you either need to reduce the population, or you need to put them into a tight control grid. And that's exactly what's happening. And to me, all of these are tactics just to create that control grid, whether we do it with vaccine passports or ID wallets or CBDCs. You're talking about getting everybody on a financial transaction control grid that will give you the ability to sanction the entire global population one person at a time. We see the US do, or Europe do, economic sanctions towards countries or large or wealthy individuals, but they're trying to put in place a system where you can sanction, anybody and everywhere one person at a time using AI and software. So this is a real control grid where if they don't want you traveling more than 5 miles from your home, your money won't work 5 miles from your home. Or if they don't want you buying pizza, your money won't buy pizza. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen the video of the head of the Bank of International Settlements talking about how they can make the rules and enforce them. That's a digital control system.
Last week I was in UK in a family relaxation trip. I have seen the small shops, the retail shops and the coffee shop don't accept cash money.
Really?
But not just one, several shops. If it happened with you one time or two times, it's not strange. But if it happened from each five coffee shops or retail shops, small shop, I'm not talking about big brand, Rolex or LV or anything. No, no, I'm talking about the thing which cost you £1 or £2 or £3 or $5 or something. So when you take your coffee and say, help yourself to bring it to the cashier, they say to you, sorry, we do not accept cash money.
Yeah, and you were in the city though, weren't you? Not in the country.
Yeah, I was in London, yes.
Yeah. So my feedback from the United States is it's going the other way. And what's been happening, we have something called Cash Friday, where we encourage everybody to use only cash on Friday. And now another group has cash every day. But what's happening is people are talking to their hairdresser or their dry cleaner and finding that they're losing, their businesses can't be profitable because they're sending so much money on credit card and transaction fees. And if everybody will use cash, they can get their business back to profitability again. So we're seeing cash in the United States. If you look at the Fed statistics, the cash balances outstanding are growing. There's a push towards cash.
Good news. What about the digital dollar, which Biden have said about it?
So who said about it?
I think Biden have talked about it.
He just came out with a new executive order. They're trying to promote the digital dollar, and it's pretty simple. It gives them the more, if we all agree to go into 100% digital transaction system, they have complete control. And I don't care whether it's CBDC or a credit card or, you know, what we have to prevent is 100% digital. That's what we cannot permit.
We are hearing of governments wanting to create digital currency under one World Bank. What are the risks of having a digital currency and their a link to future vaccine, and what and how the link will be presented?
So this is an excellent question, because we see a surprising number of people certainly in the United States, who think, things are good because the COVID restrictions are diminishing. And they don't understand that if you can get an all digital transaction system, they will end currency. It's not a currency, it's a control system. So I call it the equivalent. CBDC is the equivalent of a credit on the company store. What they can do is like the Chinese social credit system, but I think much worse. They can put conditions on your ability to transact. So spatial control, they can define what areas of the world you can travel in, including you're not allowed to leave home. They can stop you from transacting in a whole variety of places for a whole variety of goods. So if they don't want you, as I said, buying pizza, you can't buy pizza. The worst thing though is they can then dictate all sorts of things about your healthcare policy and the intimate aspects of your life. So if you want to be able to transact, then they can say, well, you have to get a vaccine every month, or you have to have a vaccine every 6 months. What I try and tell people, the reason you don't want the vaccine passports or the green pass or the ID wallets and CBC going into effect, and you don't want to comply, you don't want to download it on your phone, you don't want to play this game, is it's the equivalent of a meta mandate. Once they put that system in place, they can mandate whatever they want, whenever they want, and you literally won't be able to live unless you've created alternative systems to transact and get food outside the system. And that includes they can take your kids away. And that's my biggest concern. Is not just that they'll mandate, injecting mysterious ingredients into your arm, and including in a way that makes you sick and kills you. But in fact, they can literally destroy the family and separate the family.
You know, the now the leader of government is Klaus Schwab. He gives order to all the governments, and unfortunately, a lot of governments and leaders are following this guy. Even in our region, we are followers. We just listen and follow. Even if they are going to take us to a hell, we will follow what they are doing. So Schwab have talked about the economic forum. Who is this guy? Who is this guy?
So, you know, I don't take Schwab seriously. First of all, you know, he looks so much like Blofeld from the James Bond movies. He's hard to watch and take seriously. But the World Economic Forum is like a lot of groups around the world where leaders get together and it gives them a chance to talk and develop ideas and consensus. So it supports them on building consensus and sort of creating what I would call a field. And that's a very useful function, but I don't see it as a group that has any real power. If anything, I see them as a marketing front for what the central bankers and Mr. Global are trying to do. So this gets back to the idea of chew toys. You know, if you're going to do, the central bankers voted in 2019 to do the going direct reset. And I see Klaus Schwab and his group as basically marketing that going direct reset, marketing aspects of it to the kids and a variety of different people around the world. It's sort of a marketing front and a way to get together. But if you look at the people making the real decisions and driving the train, you know, some of them may go to Davos, but I don't see Schwab as being, you know, I see Schwab as being very useful as a marketing arm, but I don't see Schwab as having real power in the reset.
So he's doing a job for the others, and some leaders are following the others.
Well, he's kind of, you know, it's like a puppet show, and he's, you know, if you're the right guys running the real reset, you don't have time to talk publicly, let alone to market publicly. You need somebody out there, you know, doing your marketing. So I see him as being a marketing arm of the central bankers and Mr. Global. I don't, you know, and I think Schwab is, I just wonder, Schwab is a person who strikes me as not having his feet on the ground.
So he's like a mic in the hand of the speaker.
He's like a cheerleader of the going direct reset. He's a cheerleader. And, you know, if you're in a soccer game and you've got two teams and two coaches and the guys who own the two teams, you know, there's a lot of power. And then you've got the star players and then you've got the cheerleaders. And the cheerleaders get a lot of attention, especially during halftime, but you wouldn't say they're running the game.
He have a statement about genetically editing people. Why they is not or they don't account him about this, what he have said about genetically editing people? The statement have been several times.
So that's a very good question. And I don't know. I haven't, if you look at the, to the extent that I talk to people and attorneys who are bringing legal actions, you know, they're much more inclined to bring legal actions or file notices of liability to the regulatory agents or political leaders who have the power to put out the money and make the decisions. So, so they're focused on sort of what I would call the mechanisms of money and power more than the cheerleader.
I think you have seen or listened to his video interview. He have said they are planning to implement people with IT technology microchip.
Right, right. So, you know, and Schwab is the one who said, you know, or the World Economic Forum has said it's 2030, you have no assets and you're happy. And, you know, and I keep saying, you know, what that translates to in English is it's 2030. We've stripped you of your assets and you're mind controlled or you're chipped, you know, whichever it is. But it is astonishing to me because we see instances of, for example, the Secretary of Treasury just doing a speech at Davos and being unbelievably complimentary of Klaus Schwab. And you're thinking, you're responsible for the entire U.S. Treasury market and regulatory functions with respect to the U.S. stock market. And you're basically sitting here promoting a man who's talking about ending personal and private property. You know, I think to a certain extent, you know, one of the things that's happening, and it happens to me and everybody else, you're watching something that is so completely incoherent that, you know, you're trying to figure out where to attack because the whole thing is so without any kind of logic. I mean, why would somebody who's in charge of more personal property from a regulatory standpoint than any person in the world, you know, promote and encourage somebody who's promoting to destroy private property? Why would you do that?
Can you explain for us what access the human body does to this technology?
What?
To him. Can you explain for us what access to the human body does this technology give him?
Well, that's this, you know, I can only speculate about that. Every quarter we do something called a wrap up and we have a whole section called unanswered questions. If you look at the effort they've been making to, you know, there's a lot of now speculation about chipping, about the tattoos, about brain machine interface, about, you know, getting sensors into the body through nanoparticles. I'm not a scientist and, you know, I've read a lot of this material and what I'm not clear about is what if this technology is just something that is being experimented with and what technology do they have that really works? I will say this, there's a group of people in America and Europe called the Targeted Individuals who've been dealing with electronic abuse and they feel that the chipping is happening. And on an involuntary basis, and that it does relate to mind control of the ability to inflict pain. So, you know, the way I would say this based on what I've seen is I think this kind of prototyping is going on right now, and the leadership is literally trying to figure out, on one hand, they're trying to figure out how to make a robot human. On the other hand, they're trying to take a human and figure out if they can literally control it in the same system, control a human being in the same system that they can use to manage and control robots and sort of one integrated labor force, if you will. So I think there's a real effort to integrate robotics into the labor force, the workforce, and integrated into the legal system in a way that there's a continuum from a controlled human to a human-like robot, and they're prototyping which works for what function. And unfortunately, the vision, whether it's Gates or Schwab or any of these people, is the vision is one of looking at the human race as if they were livestock as opposed to humans. So their vision is a human race in which an individual human has absolutely no sovereignty and absolutely no rights. And they can enforce that centrally by physically compromising us. And they're trying to use technology to do it.
Mm. So, Klaus Schwab has gone a record saying that has trained young global leaders, such as Merkel, Trudeau, Macron, Bill Gates, and Boris Johnson, and many others. He has said on video recorded interview that he has infiltrated governments. Can you explain if this infiltration is a threat to the stability of independent countries and their people?
So, you know, I just see Schwab as being a blowhart and vastly exaggerating his importance and role in the world. In other words, if you look at any leader, so we take Trudeau, he's got a treasury, he's got a central bank, and the treasury and central bank are coordinating with other G7 central banks and the BIS. And if anything, Justin Trudeau is controlled by the bond market and the bankers, not by Klaus Schwab. Now, to the extent that Klaus Schwab is cheerleading for the bankers and the central bankers, you know, there's an alignment and they'll use Klaus Schwab to do their communication for them. But, you know, if you think Klaus Schwab has more influence than the bond and the derivatives markets on a government leader who's in a debt trap, you're smoking dope. So I think the people who run the financial system are driving what's happening in these countries. And one of the reasons they can is they've been able to put them in a debt trap.
There is any action trying to present them to court or a legal criminal case because of what he is saying?
I don't know. I don't know. I think that's an excellent question. Who could get standing in a sovereign nation's court and hold him accountable legally for what he's saying? I don't know. That's a very interesting legal question. I mean, the way to go at it, I would think, would be RICO conspiracy, because he is engaging in a conspiracy, a global conspiracy, to compromise the laws of different countries. And so to me, the statute in the United States that you would go at this would be RICO. But I think it's a very interesting legal question as to whether there could be standing or not.
The World Economic Forum speaks of the fourth industrial revolution. What is this industrial revolution?
I'm still trying to figure this out.
Now our some politics in our region, I am in Kuwait. I'm not afraid or worried about saying anything. So they are proud to present the industrial revolution. And it will come back over our head and our people head in the near future.
I've read the material from the World Economic Forum on this, and I think there is a revolution in material sciences, and that you know you get technology that's much stronger and much lighter and can make it much more economic to do things you know we could never have considered. So there is a new leap forward in what is possible technologically. But what's interesting is that without a powerful culture that can handle the technology that we're talking about, you know, we're much more inclined to get a mess. It's a little bit like giving cavemen laser guns before they've evolved the culture that makes it possible for them to risk manage and handle laser guns. So I think it was Einstein who once said that technology was like acted a little bit like an axe in the hands of a serial killer. So what the fourth industrial revolution is to me is an effort by a small group of people to use technology to implement very high change at very high speed in a way that gives them total central control of the whole population that ultimately will lead to a mess. So it's the adaptation of technology by a society that doesn't have the spiritual and cultural grounding to use that technology well yet. And we just hope we survive the experience so that we can grow up and learn how to use the technology well. Because I love a lot, you know, I love technology. I love a lot of the technology. I think a lot of it is pretty cool. And, you know, I love the idea of things like space elevators. So
it's too big. This is my understanding. They are saying to some people, in charge people in our region, especially in Middle East and Arabian Gulf countries, they said, we will give you and secure you from your people. So the best way is to depend on our industrial revolution. And this is a big lie. The people of any country is the power of any leader.
Right. So, well, this comes down to what has value. Is it people or is it tools? And, you know, you and I agree it's people, and the tools are there to serve the people, not the opposite. I think, you know, this gets back to whether or not we can use our technology to build a great civilization. And the frustrating thing about building a great civilization is you have to build it one child at a time. And it takes time. It takes time. You can't do it fast. And just because you think you can use technology to replace people doesn't mean you have the right to do it or it's a good idea. I want to tell you a story just because I would love for you to know this story. I was in the City of London, in fact, when I heard the story. It was an investment conference many years ago. And a wonderful bond manager got up and told the story. And it's the story of the psychoanalyst Jung. And a woman came to see Jung and she was very dressed as an aristocrat, clearly very wealthy. And she said to Jung, she hadn't given him her name. And she said, I'm not going to tell you my name because I'm only going to come once. And so you don't need to know my name. Here was her story. She, as a young woman, she's from a very aristocratic, wealthy family. She had gone to medical school and she had done very well. After she graduated, she fell in love with her best friend's husband and she couldn't stand the tension. And so given that she was a doctor, she knew how to do it. She murdered her best friend. And after her best friend died, she married her best friend's husband. Immediately after she got married, she got pregnant, and then everything started to go wrong. She was a very accomplished horsewoman, and the horses bucked and reared, and she had these beautiful wolfhounds. The wolfhounds died. Her husband died shortly after she got pregnant, so she was married for a very short time. After she gave birth to a daughter. Her daughter hated her, and as soon as she was old enough to run off, she ran off and left her. And she told Jung, she said, you know, that she had literally been ostracized from society. She told Jung, wherever she went, the birds would stop singing. She said the birds knew. And what that story describes to me is a person who's literally her karma has destroyed her life. And I would tell you that I think in modern society, we are experiencing a karma that is destroying our life. And we seem to think we can solve the problem or fix it with more technology. And I don't think we can. I don't think, you know, our reality is both concrete and visible and invisible. And we are so bankrupting our energetic and spiritual reality that we are at a real tipping point. And so whether it's financial capital or fancy technology, we seem to have a planet that's run by hypermaterialists who I think have lost touch with the wisdom that is woven into the fabric of the universe. And the question for all of us is, how do we get back to that? And it starts with cleaning up our spiritual and energetic reality, which brings us back to human rights and the need to build a culture that is the firm foundation of civilization, where whether it's human rights or sovereign law is respected. We have a group of people running the world who don't respect their own laws and don't obey their own laws. And ultimately, you know, the only place that can go to is dramatic depopulation. If there's no law, there is just total chaos. And increasingly on the world stage, that's what we're seeing. You know, and I hate to pinpoint my countrymen, but my countrymen, Lavrov once said of the American political establishment, they're not agreement capable. We don't keep our agreements. So that's worked well for a certain period of time, as long as you could ride the reserve currency roll. That ride is over, or almost over, which is why the scramble for digital transaction control grids.
Our main problem, it start, I will talk about some in charge people or leaders in the Middle East. And you know, in some countries, it is forbidden to talk about the leaders. But I will say, yeah, since 40 or 50 years when they discover the oil, in that time in our territory or in the Middle East, the foreign companies come and discover this by their technology, discover this oil, and day by day, year by year, it comes a wealth from this oil. So they participate with the owners of the companies, oil companies around the world. So some leaders and in charge people in our Middle East countries, some of our Middle East countries, they start to save their money in the United States, in France, in Switzerland, in the United Kingdom. Sorry. And this thing come to them as a threat in the present time. They have the wealth outside their country, so they feel that they are very weak, because the owners of the bank, as a part of them, these kind of Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates, and these kind of criminals. Now they are threatening them and threatening their wealth. And the same thing happened with when the Ukraine and Russian attack Ukraine. A lot of businessmen, a lot of merchants from Russia, before the war, they were highly respected. When the war start, everything collapsed and they control their wealth. And this is what will go on, I think, if they believe some leaders in our region, in our Middle East countries, if they believe and follow Schwab and Bill Gates. If they think that we are the victim, no. If we will be the victim today, these kind of leaders, I'm not talking about all leaders, I'm talking about the leaders whom they don't respect their countries, they don't want to secure their countries, they don't respect their people. Someday, if they believe that we are the victim today, tomorrow they will be the victim. So the fair will come to them. The judgment will come to them if they keep silent about what is going on against their people.
So one of the things I see happening is I see, if you look at the very top group who I call Mr. Global, I think they're trying to turn the country leadership and the people against each other. So ultimately, they're looking to the people to take out the country elites, which will be very convenient for them. And that's why I think it's so important that if we can find more ways to build a win-win between country elites and leadership and the people, we are much better off.
Yes.
Right. And part of that is bringing enough money home to build local resiliency in the economy in a way that is win-win. So you want to make it attractive for country elites to invest locally, and build up the local economy and build up the local education and people. So there's a lot of pressure on them not to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
Boris Johnson also had speech in the United Nations, put a circle around it. This in the United Nations, whereas also said the people be linked to the Internet of Things and there will be no privacy anymore, and everyone habits will be uploaded into digital cloud. Tell us about his UN speech.
So I believe that part of the vision of this digital control grid is that every human being is on a blockchain and 100% of their data is uploaded onto that blockchain. And of course, one of the questions is the cloud going to be, you know, on a server someplace around the world, or is it going to be on their DNA? Literally, they're talking about uploading the data onto a person's DNA and sort of using their body as their cloud. So I think they do envision a zero privacy world, you know, complete 24/7 invasive access to you and all the data about you, your home. So, you know, I often talk about the control grid turning your home into a digital concentration camp. And I think that really is their vision.
Mm-hmm. The World Economic Forum has said you will own nothing and you will be happy. This statement is a breach of human rights, as you are aware. Why has this gone unnoticed or challenged in the criminal in a court of law? And why is Klaus Schwab being received as a head of state in most countries?
So we discussed this one already, for the life of me. I understand. Yeah, I understand why you wouldn't. Schwab would not be the first stop for legal action just because, he's kind of a floater and people are more focused on what's happening in their sovereign governments and protecting their constitutions. But as I said before, I think it's an interesting legal question. Because if you look at what he's doing, he is basically proposing breaking the law. So it'll be an interesting legal question whether there is a way to get standing and to hold him accountable legally for what he's doing. And as I said, I think the first place I would look is in the U.S. whether the RICO statutes would apply. I believe if you could get Klaus Schwab under deposition, you could absolutely prove that RICO conspiracies were occurring in the conversations that were happening at Davos. Mm-hmm. So that's a guess.
Yes, I was repeating this question by another way, just to allow the people to hear the legal action. Maybe we will find some. Now, some lawyers around the world are acting against what is going on. But we want to encourage the lawyers in our region to act as the international lawyers. Because of this, I repeat this question by another way. So okay. the meaning of this question is a message to our region.
So the place I would be looking for legal action is I would be looking for legal action against the quantitative easing of the central bankers, because that's what's driving the inequality. You know, so again, I see this as much more an action of the banks and the central bankers and enormous lawlessness in how the money is being created and the treasuries are being compromised. So, you know, maybe it's because I understand financial fraud. I'm much more focused on that angle.
Do you have a knowledge how the fourth industrial revolution is taking place in the Middle East?
No, I don't. I don't. I would love to know. Other than, of course, we also the robot gets Saudi citizenship. So that message was spread around the world, but I really don't know. And I would be very interested to know, because I think, you know, if you look at the land and the desert and what can be done in the desert with the fourth industrial revolution, it's quite interesting.
Maybe it will be covered by the sand of the desert. What technologies initiative being carried out around us in the Middle East region, so that we, especially in Kuwait, we can be aware, so we can protect our country autonomy and the freedom of our people if this scenario become a threat to us?
So I think this scenario is absolutely a threat. And what I would argue is, I think it's very important for each one of us to not permit a digital transaction control grid to go into place. And so it's very important to keep your financial system physical. You know, we like digital. Digital is fast and it's efficient, but we need to keep our cash systems to going and healthy. And we need a way of transacting with each other outside of the banking system and trusting each other outside the banking system. So that's part a cultural issue, part a legal issue, but part a financial issue. So keep the basics of life and the financial transaction system enough out of central control. And for heaven's sakes, whether it's the QR codes, the vaccine passports, the ID wallets, don't adopt them, don't comply. You know, it's true, there's so many more of us than there are of the people trying to do this. We need to understand the central bankers and the banking system want total central control. And if we permit it, we lose all of our human rights, all of our laws, all of our freedoms, all of our protections. And so it's the simple way to do it is to refuse to adopt it. One of the reasons we see a real stepping back here in Europe of the implementation of the vaccine passports, the pushback was so enormous. People were very clear as to where this was going to lead, and they pushed back and pushed back hard. And now we're seeing sort of a reformulation in this push now to come with the WHO treaty in other ways. So it's far from over. But the more individuals say, no, we will not adopt this, because we understand that if we do adopt it, what's going to happen is much, much worse than what's happening now.
They succeed.
If they succeed, we cannot. But the interesting thing is, if we simply refuse to adopt it, it can't go forward. So this is a slavery system, and this is a system that will implement digital concentration camps. And the one thing I would say to the leadership of any sovereign nation is, you know, this is designed ultimately to turn the people and the local country elites against each other. And so if you're a country elite, you have a vested interest in trying to turn it around now and protect, you know, the sovereignty of your nation and your people in a way that protects you in the long run from what could happen if you allow the divide and conquer between the elites and the people to happen.
I think it is known things that our countries will be safe with us, with the people, with the leaders, but not with the Tudors and the Bill Gates and Schwab. We are defending our countries and we'll protect them. And as we defend our countries, also we are protecting our leaders, because we have a family relation with our leaders. But we are warning them about what is going on. Their leaders, our leaders, is different than Tudor and Boris Johnson and other Macron. These people have been filtered by Schwab and his group.
So you know, it's interesting when you talk about people who have their money in London or France or these other places. I understand how fragile it can feel to have your money in a variety of places and to be dependent on the system. And that's the problem with centralized systems. You know, we all feel so overwhelmed by the need to move to a, you know, a situation where we're helping each other globally be free. You know, it just seems so big and overwhelming. And it's the tendency to say, you know, I'm only one person. What can I do? I'm just going to go along with the system. You know, in America, we say we have to go along with City Hall. I'm just going to go along with City Hall because I'm only one person and it's too big and it's overwhelming. The reality is that, you know, there are billions of us sitting around saying, oh my God, we feel overwhelmed. What can we do? And what I absolutely believe, and this is the way I've lived my life since I got booted out of the establishment for doing this, and that is, you know, I'm only one person, but I can do what I can do. And there are, I think, billions of other people who also want to be free. I think if you look throughout history, you know, ultimately tyranny always fails and it never turns out well for the tyrants. So I'm not saying that freedom is convenient, and I'm not saying that, you know, all of us are going to make it if we insist on being free. But to me, it's the only way to live. And one of the things I can tell you, having operated like you in the housing department at the top of my government, if you look at where these things are going, you know, I would rather die now trying to be free than to go where they want to go. You have no idea how dark this is. This is as dark as it gets. We don't want to go there. So I don't know where the freedom fighters end up, but I'd rather be out there, you know, in the desert with you fighting for freedom. I don't want to get stuck down in the underground bases with these guys. Trust me. I'll take my chances up here on the ground.
The world is opening up and removing mandates. But again, Bill Gates is warning of a future pandemic. Is there a link of this future pandemic to the plan for digital currency and vaccine?
These guys have not backed off in a second. They've learned a lot from the last 2 years. They're back in the engine room retooling and they're ready to roll out the control grid. So take a deep breath and get ready to say no loudly and clearly, you know, all around the planet. Let's go.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. We can coordinate for this thing because we are human and they're trying to put us in a cave or in a jail not stop them, but they will absolutely fail. We will continue day by day, strong and more stronger the next day to the other day.
Right. So, you know, the hard part I think about the what I call the pro decentralization team is gathering together is, you know, it's hard for healthy people to fathom where these guys want to go. But as more and more people do, I think the pushback is going to be unbelievably powerful. So you know, Kennedy always says, I'll join you on the barricades.
And this is a message to our people in our region and in the Middle East. They should act to defend themselves. We are doing all our best to protect them. By saying the truth, by doing all what we can do, but also they shouldn't sleep. They should wake up. What is going against them? May they will not notice this thing today, but in the future, absolutely. It will be a disaster for them if they stay at home and keep silence.
So I would just say, don't be afraid. Don't get frozen in fear. Don't be afraid. You have to move. Get moving, yeah. and don't feel overwhelmed. Just do what you can.
The day of our birthday is the day of the Creator, and the death is in the hand of the Creator. So absolutely, Nobody can stop make a short day before our death day, which have been created by God. So right. we know Nobody can stop us. I am talking about ourselves. Nobody can stop us until the day of our death. So because this is, we think that this is a human rights is a part of our family, our children, our families, other people. If the other people have been affected have been a victim, one day we will be a victim if we keep silent and we don't protect them.
Right, absolutely.
So we will. We are disturbing you, but we have another two questions. Is the internet? What is the internet of bodies, and is it a part of the Great Rest and the Fourth Industrial Revolution?
So I'm assuming, I don't know a lot about it, but I think the Internet of Bodies is, you know, as I said, they want to, is the idea of integrating digital technology into the human body with sensors or tattoos or any of these different technologies, and literally sort of networking us into the, you know, into all things. If you look at what's happened in the last 30 years, certainly in the United States, there's an effort to digitize everything. You know, the atmosphere, the, you know, homes, equipment, everything. And we know that if you look at how AI works, the competitor with the best AI is the one who gets the most data. And of course, if you digitize everything and provide for a 24/7 data flow, you know, that's the guy who has the most data. So, we are in a process of trying to integrate digital technology into everybody and everything, including the human body. So again, I think the vision is one that's very dark, but you know, there's no doubt that this group is going to make an effort to do it.
Can you give me, before you give me a message to our people, I would like to ask you a question because it is related to what is going on these days. Do you think that there is a relation between the attack, the Russian attack to Ukraine, and have you heard that the Russian said about some viruses factories in Ukraine they have find it? Do you think there is a relation between what is going on, like the pandemic, or it is a part of the plan, and what your comment about the viruses factories which have been announced by the Russian government?
Right. So the Russians and the Russians and the Chinese have said, I think that there were 30. The State Department appears to be calling them biological research labs as opposed to biological warfare labs. Victoria Nuland from the State Department admitted to Senator Rubio in questioning in the recently in the Senate that the United States was funding biological research. She called it a research lab. I would interpret Nuland's comments as admitting that this was true. Now we can debate were there 30, were there three, how many, but if you look at the you know, all I can tell you is if the Russians had financed 30 biological research labs in Mexico, America would have invaded Mexico long ago. So there's no doubt, based on Nuland's testimony, that there's something very real here. And it doesn't surprise me, because if you look at the history of Fauci and Gates's operation, it's a global operation. And I think to preserve the reserve currency, you know, papering the world with hundreds of biowarfare labs has been one of the tactics. So based on Nuland's testimony, I'm assuming that what the Russians are saying are essentially true.
The Congress will investigate about this thing?
I don't know if that's the case. You know, if you're Congress, it's a dangerous topic to open up. So I think the this is a very interesting situation because Newland, if you watch the Newland testimony, the Pandora's box has been opened. And the Russians were backed up by very strong statements from the Chinese, who were asking for the ability to send in weapon verification, weapon inspectors. So I've tried very hard to get really good documentation on what the biowarfare labs and research labs around the world are, who's funding them, who controls them. I will say this, one of the problems you face globally is we have very powerful technology that when a society goes into implosion, it's dangerous. So when a country such as the Ukraine diminishes in the quality of the governance and in the health of the economy to the point it has, having facilities like that in a society that's imploding is exceptionally dangerous. And and that's the problem with a lot of this technology. If we're going to have advanced technology, we have to have an advanced culture. And we can't permit imploding societies around nuclear plants and very sophisticated technology. It's very scary. So I would say there's something here, but we're never going to get to the bottom of it without international investigation. I don't think the U.S. Congress can do it.
Because the MPs of the Congress, they are presenting the American citizen, and the American citizen are paying the tax. So the government of the United States is using the money of its citizen. And about think if this thing is the truth. Right. I'm talking about the labs in the Ukraine.
So the U.S. government, one of the critical issues in the United States is the U.S. government, in terms of the financial management laws, has failed to obey the financial management laws for many, many years. And a time is coming where the citizens have to deal with the fact that they're paying money into an organization that's not following the laws related to financial management. And I would hope that issue would come to a head in the next year or two. And this gets back to the question of sovereignty and lawfulness. If we all pay taxes into a government that's not obeying the law and is subject to international treaties that are not obeying the law and are not obeying human rights, what do we do and how do we do it?
Mm-hmm. I
would love to see more people follow up on Newland's testimony, because I think Newland has really opened Pandora's box.
Yes, and it is two crimes, using the citizen money in a bad thing and breaching the law of human rights around the world. United States is one of the main countries who are defending the human rights. And by talking in all the countries, by protecting the human rights, and how we believe that they are talking and something and doing another bad thing, again, it's human rights.
So I don't understand what's been happening in the Ukraine other than, again, watching Newland's testimony and some commentary on it. The one thing I will say, and this gets back to Kennedy's book, which if you don't have a copy, I'm happy to send you a copy if you'd like one. And I've got a stack of them in the other room. I keep sending them out. And in the United States, we have been subject from pretty much the time that Fauci went into his current position to a process which I call the great poisoning. Our population has deteriorated dramatically in terms of health and IQ. 54% of the children have chronic disease. IQs are falling steadily. It's very, very bad. And if you look at the government policies that have implemented this, we are being poisoned. And to me, COVID-19 and the injections from COVID-19 are just part of something that's been going on longer and is much bigger and includes the digitization of everything. That's part of what's doing the poisoning. And I really think it's time to sit down and look at the contribution that this poisoning is making to human health and human IQ. and ask the question, what in the world is going on and how do we stop it? And as, you know, as cheerleaders in good standing, I think Gates and Schwab and some of the other people who've been promoting this poisoning need to be held accountable. So I commend your efforts for trying.
And all leaders whom have been infiltrated by Schwab and his group.
You know, it's interesting because I've watched in America a terrible deterioration in the respect of the leadership for the people and the respect of the people for the leadership. One of the reasons that the leadership so disrespects the people is because the people behave in the ways that people behave when they're being poisoned. And, you know, if we weren't poisoning them, they might behave a lot better. So there's a cycle of disrespect, and it is not unrelated to what happens, you know, to your IQ and to your energy and your health when you're poisoned.
Can you give me or give a message to our people about the dangers that come with digital money and what can countries should do to protect themselves?
So the danger of digital money is that you can be centrally controlled. Now, you know, I think digital money can be a fantastic and wonderful tool. Again, I love technology. I also love money. So digital technology can be a real blessing where you have a governance system which is for the people and for human rights. But I think it's very important to not let digital money become either a trap for economic sanctions or central control. And so I would do everything I could to make sure, whether it's your food, whether it's your energy, whether it's the, you know, the basic household goods that you need, you know, as well as a transaction economy, that you have serious alternatives in the physical world that cannot be controlled by any digital system, including digital money. So, you know, it's not an either or thing. There are many, many advantages of digital money, including global transaction at low cost. Never let your system become totally digital, because then it won't be money and currency. It'll be control and slavery, particularly if it's controlled from outside of your out of your sovereign nation. So we want a system that supports sovereign individuals and sovereign nations. And an all digital money system isn't that. If you don't believe me, I want everybody in Kuwait to go to Solari.com, click on the link for Cash Friday, and you'll pick up a 56-second video of the head of the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, explaining to you why he and the central bankers will have total central control of all your money if they have a digital currency in 56 seconds. It's fabulous.
Can you repeat the site?
Yeah, so Solari.com, S-O-L-A-R-I.com. And on the homepage, there is a meme that says Cash Friday. Click on Cash Friday, and there's an explanation of why we encourage everybody to use cash on Friday. And at the top is a video of Carstens, the head of the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, explaining once they have digital currency and CBDC, they can make the rules and they can enforce the rules. It's chilling. It's chilling. But it's a beautiful example of a central banker, God love him, being honest. which is a very special and rare moment.
we know who is really behind the digital currency and who is the founder. But our people should know this thing. It is a dangerous thing.
Yeah. So if you just will get everyone in Kuwait to watch that 56-second video, you will understand why you don't want an all-digital transaction system. You know, I don't care whether it's time IOUs or barter or cash or silver or cigarettes or, you know, when the wall came down in Russia, the big one was vodka. That vodka was better than gold. So there are many different currency systems throughout history, but you want resilient and redundant and physical options always. Keep it, you know, keep it grounded. keep it grounded. Take your shoes off, put them in the soil, and keep your money grounded.
It is nice to hear you, and I thank you very much. This meeting is a wonderful meeting with a wonderful miss. You are wonderful. We appreciate, I personally highly appreciate your efforts to protect the human rights and to clarify to the people the truth. And this kind of meetings will wake up a lot of people, not just in Kuwait, all around the world, because it will be in the media as soon as possible. So you are a great, and I'm really saying excuse us if we go in a lot of questions about this crime, but on the end of the this meeting, I think we have a lot of benefits, and we will explain it directly to our peoples and advise them and recommend to them to not just follow this meeting and all other meetings related to what is going on in the world.
Well, someday, I really appreciate the opportunity to do this, but someday I hope that when all this craziness is beyond us, I can come to Kuwait and meet you in person. So,
and you are welcome. This is open invitation anytime.
Okay.
Open invitation. I will receive you from airport to airport.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Soleri Report. So you have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much.